You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. I'm joined by your favorite beat reporter, Chris Fedor, and today is supposed to be another Hey Chris Day. But you know how this business goes, Chris. When news breaks, sometimes you gotta switch gears, and today we need to talk about Donovan Mitchell and how he's not only been out for the last two games, but he's going to be out for the next three games to come. Chris, tell the people a little bit more about what's going on with Don.
Let me crack open my sparkling water first. If I was a member of the Cavs front office or the Cavs coaching staff, that would be a beer or maybe something a little bit harder because it's just not a good
day.
Not a good day for the Cavs. A lot of injuries have piled up at the wrong time. We knew coming into March it was going to be a grueling schedule, a bunch of playoff opponents, a lot of congestion with the schedule, 5 games, 7 nights, 9-14, 5-7 again, back-to-backs aplenty. So this was going to be difficult anyway for the Cavs. And now they're dealing with an injury to Donovan Mitchell. Max Strus hurt himself at the end of the New York Knicks game. Isaac Okoro hurt himself in that game as well. And Caris LeVert is still recovering from the sprained elbow suffered against the Chicago Bulls. But I think when it comes to Donovan, you know, it's a PRP injection. He's got a bone bruise in his left knee. It's been bothering him since the end of the Chicago double overtime game last week. And I think everybody decided that this was the best path to try and get him back on the court as soon as possible and as safely as possible and potentially as pain-free as possible. But I think it is something that we're going to have to monitor as the season continues to progress.
Yeah, Kristen, I mean, we started the season with Jared Allen injuring his ankle and having a bone bruise, and we obviously know how that affected him, and knees are never fun. So this is definitely something we'll have to monitor going forward, and I think I'm going to switch this whole episode around, and we're going to start with how Donovan and all of the injuries that you mentioned could affect the Cavs going forward, and especially in this March that we have not been looking forward to when it comes to the Cavs and who they got playing. And I don't think there could have been any worse of an opponent, at least in the Eastern Conference right now, than who they got tomorrow in the Boston Celtics. Boston, who has Jaylen Brown and Kristaps Porzingis both listed as questionable for tomorrow's game, have been on a tear, are on an 11-game winning streak, and simply look like as good of a team as the 73-win Golden State Warriors, to be very frank. And I don't know, Chris, do you think these teams, well, we already know that these teams do not match up well, first of all, and they're on two different tiers, but with the injuries and with the starting lineup that might come about, that's my first question to you, is who do you think is starting tomorrow? Let's consider everybody's out. Isaac's out, Max is out, Donovan's out. All of those guys are out. I think I would go Darius, Sam, Dean, Evan, and Jarrett. How does that sound to you?
I don't think they really have too many other options. Obviously, that changes if Isaac Okoro, who's listed as questionable, is able to go, or Caris LeVert, also listed as questionable, able to go. I would think that they want to keep Caris coming off the bench in a six-man role. They've been committed to that. He's made one start all season long, despite all of the different injuries that the Cavs have dealt with, and many of them at the guard spots. So look, if Isaac Okoro is able to play through his elbow sprain, then that changes. But I don't know that they have too many other options than what you laid out there. And I think it would be hard to justify starting George Niang as opposed to Dean Wade. But I think we're just in a situation, Ethan, where there aren't a lot of good options, and you might have to take the best of the bad options in front of you.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, this is the first game of a back-to-back, with Atlanta being the next game in Atlanta. And knowing Isaac and knowing how much he loves to play in his hometown and put a little beating on the Atlanta Hawks, and also how this week shapes up with them having to come back and play the Timberwolves on Friday, and then also and then face the Brooklyn Nets on the same week on Sunday, I think the Cavs understand that the best case scenario is a 2-2 record, and even that seems like a stretch at this point with all the injuries going on. So maybe they rest Isaac Okoro against the Boston Celtics as a precautionary method so they can have him at full strength potentially against the Atlanta Hawks.
I mean, I think that's the situation that the Cavs have found themselves in. Not that they're going to purposely rest guys or look ahead to the schedule and say one matchup is easier than the other, one matchup is more winnable than the other. But the danger for the Cavs right now, and for Donovan, as of now, he is going to be out at least the next three games. It could be longer than that. He's going to be reevaluated this weekend. They're going to see how his knee responds to the PRP injection. They're going to see what makes the most sense for him and for the team moving forward. So it's only three games for sure, but it could end up being longer than that. And this is a dicey situation that they find themselves in here, Ethan, because last night, the loss against the Knicks allowed the Bucks to pass them. Now look, Milwaukee's playing tonight without Giannis. He's dealing with an Achilles injury. He warmed up pregame, and he cut his warm-up short, and he went back to the locker room, and he was quickly ruled out. Achilles injuries are very, very dangerous. Achilles injuries are ones that you do not want to mess with. They often linger, and I would expect the Bucks to be pretty cautious. So tonight they're losing by double digits to the Clippers, at least as we're recording this podcast right now. But if Giannis can get back healthy and be effective, the Bucks were starting to turn it around. They've won five straight games. They're playing better defensively, something that a lot of people didn't think was possible. They're rolling on the offensive end. Damian Lillard looks like he's starting to get more and more comfortable for Milwaukee. Bobby Portis playing well, coming off the bench. So Milwaukee passed the Cavs last night, and it feels like they're playing better basketball than the Cavs. And on top of that, the Cavs are going into a grueling portion of their schedule with a bunch of playoff teams: Boston, Minnesota, Phoenix, New Orleans, Indiana, Miami, Minnesota. All of them are coming in the next 10 games. So we could be staring at a situation where the Cavs go from what looked like the number two seed in the Eastern Conference to fighting back in that 4-5 spot. And we've talked about this on the podcast, Ethan, and I've written about this for Cleveland.com. For the Cavs, the difference between a long playoff run and potentially a first-round exit could be tied to who they match up with in the first round of the playoffs. It could be tied to what seed they end up with at the end of this regular season. So right now, Orlando's 6, but there's a belief around the NBA, and I have the same belief, that Orlando's probably going to fall a little bit, Miami's probably going to rise. So you're talking about the Cavs now suddenly being in the same bracket area as New York, Philadelphia, and Miami. And if we're talking about the kinds of opponents that the Cavs would want to avoid or should want to avoid in the first round to try and ensure themselves getting out of the first round, it's those three teams. So fallen down the standings for this team, given the way that they've played at home and given the way that the Eastern Conference looks like it could shake out, it is a very dicey situation for the Cavs.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, Chris, like none of those matchups against the Knicks, against the 76ers, against the Heat are favorable for the Cavs at all. And
I don't think they'd be favored in those series, in any of those series.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No matter what seed they are, let's say they're the 3 seed, okay? I still don't think they'd be favored as the 3 seed against a 6-seeded Miami Heat team or a 6-seeded Philadelphia 76ers team with Joel Embiid back.
Yeah, especially because of what we saw against a
junior varsity version of the New York Knicks.
Yeah, a less stout junior varsity version of the Knicks that didn't have Mitchell Robinson, didn't have Julius Randle, and still were able to out-rebound the Cavs by nearly 10. It was not something you wanted to see. And the other thing that I was talking about on a different podcast earlier today was I was surprised by how, well, not surprised, because that's been the goal of the whole season, is to get to the second round of the postseason. But players and fans and even some of the staff have said that that is a successful season for the Cavs. It's getting to the second round, not getting past the second round, but getting out of the first round. And you look at the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler, who, as always, is Jimmy Butler, and says it doesn't matter, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seed, we're going to be in the NBA Finals. And I think that's a different level of confidence that those kinds of teams have.
Well, they've earned it.
The experience that they have and just understanding how far they have come and the mindset to go and be able to, whatever situation they're in, to win. And the Cavs are on the other side of the spectrum where they're like, well, if we don't get this certain seeding, if we face these three teams, like, it's looking dicey, and we're going to have to pull out all the stops, and hopefully we're healthy, hopefully we have our schemes figured out, hopefully we have all of our players that we need, and it's a lot of hope rather than let's get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like the Cavs are scared of these other teams, but I think everybody understands if you're trying to win a playoff series, you want the easiest road possible. You want to avoid Boston for as long as possible. You want a team like Orlando or Indiana in the first round because they don't have a bunch of playoff experience like the Heat, like the 76ers. Some of their strengths, those teams that we're talking about, and some of their weaknesses are obviously different. So I'm not going to sit here and say that the Cavs are thinking, oh my God, if we face New York or Philadelphia or Miami, it's disaster, because players can't think like that, coaches can't think like that, front offices can't think like that. But they're also human beings, and they understand how daunting those particular matchups would be compared to one against Orlando and Indiana. And in saying that, I don't know how this is all going to shake out. New York's dealing with some injuries right now. Like I said, it's up in the air what's going on with Giannis, if he's going to miss time, how much time he's going to miss. But given what's in front of the Cavs, just like a couple of weeks ago, it was a schedule that set up for them to rise up the standings. And they did that. Right now, the schedule in front of them is set up for them to take a plummet. It's hard for me to say that. It's probably hard for them to admit that as well. But that's the reality of the situation that they're currently in.
And that was before the injuries happened. So we'll just have to take a look and take a realistic glance at what could be the possibility for this Cavs team. But Chris, before we get into the questions of the subtexters after a quick break, I wanted to ask you one question. If you had to pick one player or two players that could change the tide of this March journey that they're on by stepping up immensely, who would that player or those players be for the Cavs?
Is it anybody on the roster? Are you asking me anybody on the roster?
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell.
He's going to be hurt for that at least 3 games.
So Donovan Mitchell, if he can come back after this 3-game absence and be healthy and effective and play like the guy who is the MVP candidate at the beginning of the season, then that changes the complexion of this team, because they've played more than 1,200 total minutes without Donovan Mitchell so far this year, and their offensive rating is similar to the Detroit Pistons. That's how different they are without him. And with him, they are one of the best teams in the NBA. So to me, the quickest path, forget some of the inconsistent guys that we could point to, the quickest path to the Cavs staying competitive is just what their path was during the 6 weeks when they didn't have Darius Garland and they didn't have Evan Mobley. Donovan Mitchell going supernova. That's their trump card.
That's fair. I should have been more specific. Okay.
You want to make a more specific question version of that question?
So of the guys that are not playing in tomorrow's game, excluding those, so excluding Max Strus, excluding Donovan Mitchell. So sure, you can add Isaac Okoro, who is questionable. Out of those guys, who do you think can step up and make a difference for the Cavs going forward if Donovan Mitchell is going to be out? And I'm saying it could be one player, it could be two players, but let's keep it to one or two.
Darius Garland. Darius Garland's the highest paid player on this roster. Darius Garland is the guy who coming into this year felt like he was going to take another leap and get into the stratosphere of the top point guards in the entire NBA. Him and I had a conversation coming into this season about kind of like where he ranked amongst the elite point guards, not just in the Eastern Conference, but in the league. And he asked me if he belonged there. And I told him, no, he wasn't there yet. And here's why, da 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 da. So for him, you know, he's healthy now. He's back in rhythm now. He is weeks removed from the fractured jaw. So all of those yeah, but things that were attached to Darius, all of those qualifiers, all of those circumstances, no longer on a minute restriction, things like that. I get it. It's tough if you're the lone primary ball handler. It's tough if you're the lone creator on this roster. But You got the biggest contract in franchise history. You're the highest paid player on the roster. Darius was good the other night against the Knicks. He was good, but they need him to be great. They need him to take his game to another level. Just like Donovan took his game to another level when Darius Garland and Evan Mobley were out. Just like Jared Allen took his game to another level when Darius Garland and Evan Mobley were out. Darius Garland needs to take his game to another level with Donovan being out the next three games. That's the responsibility that comes with that contract. That's the responsibility that comes with being a member of this core four. Good for Darius Garland is not good enough for the Cavs, especially when they're dealing with everything that they're dealing with right now. That's where I'm starting to look first and foremost. Darius taking that next step and showing why, you know, he is that all-star that he was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Chris, and I think the most important thing is we look at how well he was playing against the Knicks, and he was kind of ramping up his production, but he only shot one more attempt than Isaac Okoro, Jared Allen, and Sam Merrill. And he played a minimum of 4 minutes more than all of them. And I'm under the impression that if he would have kept shooting, he would have had the same output. And I want him to do that.
Like, that's quite an assumption to make.
Well, I'm hopeful. Let's say I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. But I think that Donovan Mitchell took more shots because he needed to. And that's going from good to great, is being able to keep the level of productivity while taking a higher volume of shots. And for the Cavs to take that step and be able to compete with the teams that they have in March, they need Darius Garland to do that.
And here's the other thing that they need from Darius. So when Donovan Mitchell is out, obviously they need Darius's playmaking, his shot creation, his scoring. But Donovan is the guy that teammates turn to, that they look toward for belief. They look toward for confidence. He's the leader of the team. He's the tone setter. He empowers his teammates in a different kind of way. And I just feel like there's an approach that he takes to every single game with energy, with effort, with tenacity. It's a business-like approach. It's a seriousness to every single basketball game, even against the Washington Wizards or the Detroit Pistons. That's what the Cavs need from Darius, because if Donovan is not going to be out there and he's not going to be the leader on the floor, he's not going to be the floor general, he's not going to be the offensive conductor, then that is what Darius is going to be. And teammates are going to be looking toward Darius to set that tone, right? To lead them in that kind of way. Before Donovan got here, it was Darius's team. It needs, during these next three games, it needs to be Darius's team again. And teammates have to look toward him and believe that he's going to lead them properly.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could not agree with you more, Chris. Like, Donovan Mitchell is the vocal leader of this team. Max Strus is the action leader of this team. Those two guys are now going to be sidelined, not be able to be on the court for the Cavs. And people need to step up, not only with their play, but also with their leadership abilities. And I remember I was talking to somebody earlier, and they said they were watching the game on the live broadcast against the Knicks on the national televised game on ESPN. And they said that they could hear the Knicks on defense, but they couldn't hear the Cavs on defense. And that stood out to me because we are accustomed to, one, the Cavs being a defensive-minded team. And also, while saying that, allowing 107 points is not to say that they performed poorly in that aspect. But Jared Allen is someone that is known for being the anchor and the vocal catalyst on that defensive front. But he not only kind of went quiet in that game, and two, I took notice to the fact that he wasn't available for media availability afterwards. Because I know this, and I know you know this, Jared Allen, win, lose, or draw, is usually available after games.
Hold on. That's unfair to Jared. Jarrett was there. Jarrett was ready to talk. Everybody flocked around Sam Merrill and Isaac Okoro.
I don't know how I missed a seven-footer, but I didn't
see him. He was right there. He was right there at his locker. But everybody else chose to talk to Sam Merrill, and they chose to talk to Isaac Okoro. And players don't wait for media members, usually, unless you ask them specifically to do that. So I think he was willing to talk. The guy who was not in the locker room last night following the game against the Knicks was Darius Garland.
Fair enough. I think on that note, it's time for us to take a quick break. But Chris, you know I gotta put our subtext and listeners on to something new. If you like food and drinks, and who doesn't, Cleveland.com is breaking new ground with our lively new podcast about dining and drinking in the greater Cleveland area. The hosts talk about the latest foodie happenings, joined by the most in-the-know experts in town. It's called Dine Drink CLE, and you can find it anywhere you download podcasts. Give it a listen, quench your thirst, and feed that appetite. When we come back, we are going to get into the Hey Chris portion of this episode and get into the subtexter's questions. And to be able to send in your questions for our weekly Hey Chris episodes, you can become a subtext subscriber. And to do so, sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy. But we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from Chris and me. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, Chris. Well, the submissions this week were more comments than questions with everything going on. But I was able to scour through the subtext to find some question. Here's the first one. Hi, guys. It felt like just a few weeks ago, everyone, including Hear It on the Podcast, was raving about the Cavs' depth, versatility, and how multiple they can be. The convo now seems to have turned to the Cavs don't have any other options to unseat Niang. Do we think the team was prisoner of the moment by not seeking another veteran player combo forward?
No, I don't think so. I think that question assumes that there was a deal out there that the Cavs could realistically make that was going to benefit them. And they just didn't have a lot of pieces that were valuable. They had conversations with a bunch of different teams about a bunch of different players, but they didn't have a lot of things that they could offer. They had some extra second round picks. They had some valuable contracts, but every move that was on the table for the Cavs to make, they deemed a lateral move. So I think if there was an opportunity to actually improve this roster and find somebody that was going to give them more consistency than George Niang at both ends of the floor, or be an upgrade from Dean Wade, and they actually had the pieces in order to get that guy, then they would have made a move at the deadline. But part of the reason why they didn't make a move is because they knew the reality of what they were working with in terms of trade capital.
Yeah, and I also think to what we had said beforehand, is this team is based on its chemistry. And you see a lot of people be able to mesh and grow within this organization because they've got time together. If you just throw somebody randomly into an organization like the Cavs, it could throw off or teeter-totter what they had going on. And at that point in the season, you didn't want to mess with anything that they had going because it was being successful. Now, you recognize that there are things that need to be adjusted, and you grow with that. You continue to learn as a team, as an organization, and fix and amend the problems that you have so that you can become a better team together.
Yeah, I also think it's fair to point out too, Ethan, that at the time that the trade deadline was coming, George Niang wasn't playing like this. Dean Wade wasn't playing like this. You know, sometimes guys go into slumps and they don't pick and choose when they're going to happen. But George Niang right now is in an offensive funk, and we understand that his defensive issues were always going to be there. And the hope from the Cavs' perspective is that he would provide enough juice on the offensive end in terms of three-point shooting, in terms of floor spacing, in terms of scoring off the bench. And he was doing those things for a lot of the season. It just so happens that we're having a conversation now about the power forward spot and how thin it is behind Evan Mobley, because at the same time, Dean Wade and George Niang are in a funk.
Okay, I want to preface this next question with, I'm not saying this. I'm just reading what is being said by one of the subscribers, okay? The question is, why is it so bad for the media to simply say, quote, we were a far better team without Garland and Mobley on the floor, unquote. They are no longer the core four. Mobley and DG are dull players.
Okay. Is there a question there?
No.
What's the question?
Again, that's what I'm saying. I was trying to preface this earlier. There was a lot of just comments, but I know we had to hit on this because let's start with the next game. Evan Mobley still was able to come away with a double-double of 13 points and 13 rebounds. And he was able to facilitate 6 assists. The man was 4 assists away from a triple-double. He was able to be productive, right, in certain aspects of the game. Did he get bullied on the inside a little bit by somebody that was physically not taller than him but had a little bit more girth? Yes. Could he have done better in helping to create for other teammates a little bit more, not only just passing, but creating stronger screens? Sure. But you also can't hurt to say that shots just weren't falling when he was creating open opportunities for other players as well. And DG, who was on the cusp of a 20-point game, just fell short. And we were talking about the necessity for him to step up a level further to take his performance from good to great. And we want to give him the opportunity to do that. Like, you can't say that Josh Hart and the Knicks and DiVincenzo and all of them were not hounding the Cavs on defense either. Like, the Cavs haven't been able to score over 100 points against the Knicks for a while. So it's just being able to see that there is room to grow for Evan Mobley and DG. Were they better without them? You can say that, but you also have to realize that the record and the teams that they were playing are completely different from who they're playing now after the All-Star break and with just 22 games left in the season.
Here's the thing that I'll say, Ethan. Nobody is going to back me into a corner and make me write something that I don't believe simply because they believe it. Okay? I'm going to write what I believe. I'm going to write what I see. I'm going to write what I think. And if I thought the Cavs were a clear-cut, obviously better team without Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, or one of those two, then I would write it. Just like I wrote earlier this year, the complications of playing Jared Allen and Evan Mobley together. Just like I wrote last year when the Cavs lost in a non-competitive series against the New York Knicks, that J.B. Bickerstaff got outcoached and a lot of his flaws were exposed by the Knicks. Okay? So if I believed that Darius Garland was that much of a problem for this team, that they could not be a legitimate contending team with Darius Garland in the mix, then I would write that. But I don't believe that. And just because fans out there believe it, and just because they've determined that that's the problem with the Cavs, and they want other people to believe the same thing, it doesn't mean that everybody believes the same thing as you, whoever that is. Steve, John, Bill, I don't know, somebody. So I just think it's unfair to demand somebody to write something simply because you believe it to be true. Writers have enough freedom to make their own opinions. Writers have enough freedom to go into the locker room, figure out what's what, and then present everything that they know to be true or everything that they believe to be true. So the only thing that I would ask is stop telling people what they should believe. Stop telling people what they should write.
Yeah, and I think the main point of that is, like, this is our job. Like, we are paid to go and tell the stories of the players, but also to be objective. We're going to tell you when they're playing good, and we're going to tell you when they're playing bad. We're going to tell you what we think they could be doing better to enhance their performance and to get them to where they want to go. I can tell you for certain, it's not fun covering a team that's not playing well. It's not fun covering a team that's struggling, because you, Chris, especially, who's on the road and being with these guys on almost a daily basis, you create relationships with them. You want to see them succeed.
Here's the other thing that I'll say before you go any further. When it comes to this job, it can be difficult when a team is losing. And it can be difficult to interact with players when things aren't going well. At the same time, I try my best to not be as emotional as fans. Because I am not a fan. Like, I am a journalist. I am a writer. I have a different level that I have to hold myself to. I have a different standard that I have to meet. I have been, in a way, programmed, because I've been doing this for as long as I have, to try and take the fandom and the emotion out of it as much as possible. Look, there are times that games are very, very exciting. There are times that results are very, very exciting. And I really do hope that it comes through in my writing just how much energy there is in the building, how much excitement there is in the Cavs locker room, how much a moment that happens throughout the course of the game really changes the flow and changes the dynamic and stuff like that. But I have tried to program myself to take my own personal emotions out of it and just try to look at it as clear-eyed and level-headed as I possibly can. And if fans just want people who are going to scream and yell and shout opinions over and over again without perspective, without nuance, without actual analysis, there are places that they can go to get that. And maybe those people that are shouting as loud as possible are going to agree with whatever it is the fans agree with. But that's never how I've been. And that's not how I'm going to be. And if that means that I'm not for you, then okay. That means that I'm not for you. I try to be as fair as possible. I try and be as objective as possible. I try to be as true to myself and my beliefs and my thoughts and opinions as possible. And that's how I'm going to continue to do it. So again, if I see enough evidence and enough data that goes beyond the small sample size that I believe we've seen throughout the course of this year, that makes me believe that Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland can't fit together, or Darius isn't a long-term fit in this core, then I will say that.
Chris, since we're on the topic of beat reporters, I want to go back to the question that you had me bookmark from last week. This is from Brandon in Charlotte, North Carolina, who said, "What is life like as a team beat reporter? Stresses of travel, coping with not seeing family a lot, and how to professionally handle a player that confronts you for saying something about them or asking a question they didn't like."
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, Ethan, is transparency when it comes to the player. There have been times that I've written things that a player does not like. They bring it to my attention, and we talk about it man to man, and I give them my viewpoint on it. They share their viewpoint on it. And I think as long as you don't take it to a personal level, and you're backing it up with facts, and you're explaining why you believe the things that you believe, then I think players are going to respect you. I also think players are going to have a respect for you if you're going to write the things that can be critical or they can come across as negative, and you show your face in the locker room. You're there the next day to ask those questions. You're there the next day in the locker room to have a conversation with that person if they want to have that conversation with you. Sure, it can be uncomfortable. Sure, it can be a situation where you may feel like you're caught off guard, but you have to stand your ground and you have to stay firm in the things you believe. And that goes back to the last thing that we were talking about. If I wrote something that I didn't truly believe, that I put my name to, right? And it was about a specific player, and that player comes to me and asks me why I wrote it, why I phrased it the way that I did, and all those different things, and I couldn't back it up because I didn't truly believe it. I was just spouting something else that I had heard from somebody else, or I allowed my own judgment to be swayed by somebody else, then I don't think it would come across the right way. And I don't think that the player would have respect for that. You know, Donovan Mitchell the other day mentioned something to me about what I said on a podcast over All-Star break about what he said in that locker room, and him and I talked about it, and I explained my side and he explained his, and he said at the end of it, "We're all good, Chris," and we haven't had any kind of issues whatsoever. I've had moments with Tristan Thompson in the past where I tweeted something out. He didn't like the way that it was phrased. I told him that I probably could have phrased it a little bit better, and this is what I meant to say, and it's kind of hard on Twitter or X with only certain number of characters, and we talked through it, and we've been great ever since. So I think as long as you're open and honest, you're true to yourself, and you're there to explain yourself if you do write those kinds of things, then I think you just have a man-to-man conversation. Beyond that, this job is brutally difficult. If we're being perfectly honest, I feel a level of guilt when I go on the road away from my wife, away from my son, thinking about the things that I'm sacrificing, thinking about the things that I'm missing out on. Everybody always tells me that it's a job for a young person who is single and doesn't have kids, and I'm 0 for 3 on that front. So if we're being perfectly honest, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to do this. I don't know how much more it's going to take out of me, because you're giving up a lot in order to do it. It's a great job. I love every minute of it. I love the things that it has brought me from a personal standpoint and from a career standpoint. I think I'm pretty good at it, I guess. But it does take away for everything that you get from it. There are also things that you lose. Ever since I had Elliot, there's a different level of sacrifice, and there's something more to the sacrifice that I have to make. Saying goodbye to him when I know I'm leaving for 5 to 10 days is brutally difficult when he's latching onto my leg and he doesn't want me to go. When he sees my suitcase come down the stairs, it's brutally difficult to know that I'm causing him pain in some kind of way. I'm making him sad in some kind of way. So this job takes a toll on your personal life. No doubt about it. For 6 to 7 months, you are like on constantly. On call, talking to agents, talking to executives, talking to players, doing the networking that you have to do to make sure you do this job at a high level. Gamers are so difficult. I can't even explain how difficult gamers are to do, to come up with 600 to 800 words, make it coherent, make it something that you're willing to put your name on, make it something that you're willing to hit publish on, and do it while the game is going on, and do it as close to 15 minutes within the buzzer sounding as you can possibly do it. That is not easy. That is very stressful. I feel like I've aged so much just in the last couple of years doing this job because of the stress of it, because of the travel of it. I mean, my body's breaking down. It's hard, man. It is not for somebody my age, that's for sure.
And you're a young buck in this game, stop man. It.
No, I'm not. When young I came into buck. The game, I was a young buck, and I felt like a young buck. Now I just feel old and gray. You kidding me? I get up from these awkward positions on planes because I sleep so funkily on planes. I just put the tray table down and drop my head straight forward. I get off these planes, and I'm like, oh my God, I got to call up Massage Envy or somebody and get a massage because I've got so many knots. My pelvis is off. My hip is all out of whack. Not a young buck anymore. Was at one time, though. That was fun.
Hey, I ain't seen no gray hairs on you, man. So you... But no, I definitely, like, even yesterday, I was writing about the Jared Allen and Evan Mobley situation against the Knicks, and I literally was like reading it over about 5 to 10 times before I pressed publish, because I am a young buck in this game. And I'm like, I've gotten enough hate mail this week. Are y'all gonna get on me for this take? Y'all gonna like me for this take? But I'm like, at the end of the day, like, I'm like, this is my story, and I came to the conclusion. I was like, because obviously we have editors and stuff, things of that nature, and sometimes I like for our editors to read my stuff before it publishes. Sometimes I like them to back read it, but I was just like, I just gotta let it fly. It's 8:30 in the morning. I've been up since God knows when.
Yeah. Man, that's the other thing too. The last time, Ethan, I went to bed before 2 o'clock in the morning was September.
Yeah.
Late nights, early mornings. If I set my alarm, I've got an Android, I've got a Galaxy. And when you set the alarm, it calculates how many hours of sleep you're getting.
Nuts.
On a game night going into a travel day, Ethan, if I get 4 hours of sleep, I am doing a mini celebration in my hotel bed because I'm so pumped night. About that.
I really don't think fans understand what goes into the game days. I don't even understand how you do the traveling yet. I'm going to figure it out on Wednesday when I get to go to Atlanta, because we'll be at the game from 5 for pregame till the game ends at 9:30, 10 o'clock. Then we leave at around midnight, get back to apartment, house, whatever you got.
Podcast.
At around 1. Yeah. And then podcast from 12:30 to 1:30, depending on how long it goes. And then
write.
You go write, I go edit the podcast, and depending on how the game went, I have to write afterwards. So I'll be up editing the podcast till 3-4 in the morning for it to be airing at 5, and then say, well, am I tired enough to go to bed, or am I awake enough to write this 500 to 700 word article and then go to bed at 7-8 o'clock in the morning? So it's just like, it's a battle, it's a grind, but you got to take everything you do with so much grace, because like, we are blessed to have these opportunities, this access, and all of these things. And I know we got into us a little bit and a little bit far away from
the Celtics question. That's what a podcast is about. Are you kidding me? It's about life. It's not always about sports.
Next week, Maybe we'll get back into these questions a little bit more.
I want to talk more about life. That's better. It's more interesting to me.
You sounded like Elliot there a little bit. I don't want to.
No. Everything with him is no. I've gotten to the point where I stop asking him questions. I just kind of make demands so that he can't turn around and say no to me.
Hey, man.
I tell him that we're having mac and cheese. I tell him that we're having peanut butter and jelly. I tell him that we're having mini muffins.
And the power of being a father, man. All right, Chris. I think that is a great place to end the podcast for today on mac and cheese, peanut butter, jelly sandwiches, and all of those good things. I will get to see you tomorrow, and we will run this back yet again. But until then, that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. But remember to become a Cavs insider and interact with Chris and me by subscribing to Subtext. Sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.